Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms podcast. Join me today as I bring you the last episode in the series, Decluttering Room by Room. I asked five women to join me in tackling various areas in our home, and we chatted about how to keep each space minimal and most efficient for our families. In today's episode, professional organizer and author Morgan Tyree will take us through decluttering our living room. I think this was the perfect episode to tie up the entire series. We not only talked about decluttering the living room, but we talked a lot about the balance between minimalism, clutter, and personal style, and the need to create a space that feels comfortable and relaxing. My hope is that this episode is an encouragement to you to avoid comparing your homes to those that you see on social media and to focus on what brings you joy and the functionality in your living space. But before we get there, I quickly want to share a minimalist moment of the week with you. Last week, I was in the mood to go through my clothes and to assess what I have for spring and summer. I haven't really done this in a couple of years. My husband was nearby and I asked him his opinion as I went through the majority of my spring and summer wardrobe. We were able to whittle down my closet by 10 pieces. I'm sure some of you are thinking, don't you only own 30 items? Don't you have a capsule wardrobe? No, I don't. I do have a smaller wardrobe, but I'm not quite to a capsule wardrobe. I wouldn't say all of the clothing that I own quite goes together, but I do try and keep those classic staple pieces as the foundational part of my wardrobe. So I share this as the minimalist moment of the week because I truly am a big believer that the process of decluttering is one that is continuous. I think as our tastes change and we get older, we can always go back through and find things that we no longer want to wear. Again, I think it's important to always reassess and to evaluate the things you own for what purpose they serve in your life. Maybe the smaller projects do have endpoints, but in my opinion, decluttering is a lifelong process that we're always going to be assessing the things that we have in our home, and that's totally fine. I'm not the perfect minimalist, and I don't claim to be. And I want you to know there is absolutely freedom in living with less, as you'll hear in this episode today, but it's also okay to go slow and to make this more of a life process, which ultimately will overhaul your focus and attention. So with that, I hope that you are encouraged, and I hope that you are encouraged by this episode. So let's get to it. My final conversation in the Room by Room series with Morgan Tyree. Morgan, thanks for joining me today on the Minimalist Moms podcast.
I'm always happy to be here with you. I love chatting with you about all things minimalization.
Me too. And you've been here, I feel like this is your third or fourth time, right?
I think so. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I knew you were one of the people that I wanted to have on this room by room decluttering series because I've always appreciated your advice in the past. We're going to be talking about the living room today and how to declutter the living room. But as we were just saying before you jumped on the call, this is something you're doing all the time. So I knew you would be a wealth of information for us. But before we get there, why don't you go ahead and reintroduce yourself for people? I'll be sure to link our previous episodes in the show notes, but why don't you just go ahead and reintroduce yourself and we'll get started.
Perfect. Yes. Okay. So I'm Morgan Tyree, and I currently live in Northern Colorado. And we've been here since 2016. And when we moved here, I started my organizing business. So I do that. That's kind of my primary job. I work with clients almost daily, Monday through Friday. And then I'm also an author. I've published three books. And I also teach fitness classes. So I kind of wear these different hats. And then, you know, we're getting ready to launch our last kiddo. She graduates high school in May. So we're going to be empty nesters soon. And that's just kind of a little slice of my life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I forgot about that. That's bittersweet, I'm sure.
It is. Yeah. We have prom this weekend. I mean, I don't have prom. She has prom. But it's like, here we go. It's kind of the last of everything. It's fun. But there's a bittersweet part to it too, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I saw something. There's always Instagram reels that will tug at your heartstrings about the last time that you get to do this. And there was a video of this little toddler and his sleep sack, and then he was running to the dad, and it was like the last time that you hug your child. And then the woman that did the incoming stitch or whatever they're called, she was like, no, your kids always need hugs from you until they're old and gray as well. Like, yeah. Your kids are never going to not need that. It might look a little bit different, but just like kind of easing our minds. So I guess in this transitional season for you, again, it's bittersweet that you don't have them under your roof, but I think there's also something to be said about that adult relationship with our kids. I'm not there yet, but I love my parents and I love my relationship with them.
No, I agree. I think that there's a bittersweet component to it, but I do overall, like I have two kids that are already, they're both almost out of college. So I've kind of already been through this a couple times, and it is a really neat transition because you shift from being less parent-child and more friends. And we're pretty tight, the five of us. And so I've loved every season of parenting, you know, the easy parts or the fun parts. There's plenty of challenging parts, but I do feel like for me personally, and maybe this will encourage moms and parents, is that there's kind of this natural progression. Like the kids get ready to go, you get ready to go, and the new normal is good. And I think I'm glad we've really done is we've just really grown. We've been really tight as a family. And so, you know, even if like my oldest is going to go to Madrid in the fall and be gone for 9 months, like, but we'll still FaceTime a lot, you know? So my point is like, you can really extend the relationship in a new way. It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When I see those, it does kind of put a sinking feeling in your stomach, those reels that are meant to, again, create some type of emotion in you. But I think I try and flip most things because I don't want them to have negative connotations. It's like, no, let's look on the bright side. Let's look at the good here. Let's not necessarily focus on what we're losing, what we're gaining, which is something that I think I do with minimalism too. It's like, mm-hmm. we're not losing these things in our home. We're gaining space, mental space. We're gaining peace when we get rid of the things, which is a good segue to talk about the living room.
Yeah, definitely. No, I agree with you 100%. It's life-giving to dial in your spaces and live with less because I think we all have so much to manage, whether you're a parent or not. Like there's just a lot on our plates. And so minimalism gives you more freedom to, I think, enjoy the moments in life and not just feel like you're rushing through it or trying to manage too much stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's jump into it. The living room. How would you suggest one starts to declutter their living room?
In some ways, it's going to be pretty standard as far as how I approach decluttering. And I would say, depending on the scale of the room, it's always good to break it into some sections. So, because a lot of times we don't have maybe like a half day or whatever it might take to get into a whole space. So knowing your, you know, kind of time ability and all those things, break it up into some smaller sections and work in zones to start. But the general rule of thumb, and I'm sure most people have heard this, is really pulling everything out. Because if you just kind of dabble in it, you're not really getting that full declutter experience. So, you know, if you're going through all your movies or all your photo albums or whatever you store in your living room, you know, pull it all out and assess it at that point and then, you know, kind of rebuild the system. And what I would say, it kind of depends on where you're starting from. If your living room has little to no definition as far as what's in there or what you do in there, then as you're decluttering, I would work to set up some more defined zones and then put the things back in a system. And with that, what I mean by a system is just that like with like. So if you keep board games in your living room, you designate a cupboard for that. If you want blankets, there's a basket, you know, so you kind of create zones within the bigger zone. And then, you know, if you're decluttering things too, I think you'll run across things you don't need anymore. You know, you need to recycle, get rid of, donate. Or a lot of times you'll have things in that space that don't belong. And so I always recommend when you're going to declutter anything, building in some time on the end to put those things back to their home. I mean, hopefully they have a home, but you don't just like stop the project and you've got all these piles to still deal with that don't belong in the room. So build in a little time to go get those things put back.
Absolutely. I think especially with decor in the living room, it can be too much, which I will also say, I've learned this about myself. I do like a more maximalist design. So I don't know if people have seen on Pinterest or on Instagram where there's an entire wall covered in art. And I know that that might seem cluttered, but I also, if you do it right, I think it can look really good. There's this fine line between clutter and then intentionally making it look like that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And I think that like, I don't want to speak for anybody that's listening, but I think there's a tendency we'll hear a word like minimalism and we just think stark and boring and like hard lines and not really the coziness, right? Or the feeling we want from home. And so I really do this with anyone that follows me or that I work with is that you need to define what you appreciate in a space, you know? So if for you, a full wall of artwork is life-giving and you like seeing everything, then that's your style and own it. You know what I mean? And there's art. I mean, art is very subjective, right? So we can all define kind of what our space should be like. So I think if you're going to declutter your living room and there's a need to do that, then to ask like how you want the room to feel, how you want it, what you want represented there. And then likewise, if you are on the side of where you do feel like you just kind of like your eye can't rest and your room's too busy, then really pulling a lot of it off and letting it kind of breathe. And then you'll kind of feel like where you want to put things back too. Because sometimes because we live in our spaces so day in and day out, we won't see things with fresh eyes, you know? So like pulling back can sometimes give you a better perspective. But that's kind of a design tip though, of if you've got like a
big couch, you do a big piece of art above it, or you do a big grouping. You want the scale to match, you know? So there's a place for that for sure. And if you appreciate that, then that's what you should do.
With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover this new level of softness. In a recent customer survey, 96% said that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. The sheets are made from the rarest 100% organic cotton in a buttery and breathable weave that gets softer and softer over time. I had to experience this for myself, so after receiving the sheets, I tried it out. I washed them, waited a week, and washed them again, and the skeptic in me assumed that the reviews were not true. However, I was super excited that they indeed were telling the truth, and I now have my own set that I get to sleep on every night. It's something like 20 plus years of our lives that we spend sleeping, so I want to sleep on quality sheets, and I don't mind spending a little extra for quality over quantity when it comes to sheets. Join the millions of satisfied sleepers who swear by them, and they're backed by over 11,000 glowing reviews. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code MINIMALIST at BollandBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com. Promo code MINIMALIST. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
For people that are in Columbus, I was at the Junto Hotel last night. I was at a bar there. And when I went through the lobby, the design was so lovely. And I think about when you enter a space that is overly cluttered, you can't relax. And I think that oftentimes hotels, they have it right. Just think about how you feel if you go into a hotel space or you go into a space that is not someone's home and how they intentionally make it so that it's relaxing. It's never too crowded. It's just enough.
Totally. And actually, I have a really good example that I just walked through. We are going to prepare to sell our house. And we actually were gone last week and we were going to be out of town for a whole week. So we kind of let this quiet, like little thing through realtors, like it's not fully listed. But my point in saying that is we went through and like really depersonalized the house and moved stuff out. And we have extra kind of garage space. So we just kind of moved stuff out there. But it was interesting because I would say I'm definitely middle to light on my home decor. Like I like layering, but I'm not a big layer. I don't go crazy or anything. I mean, just my own style. But it was interesting getting the home really prepped before we left and kind of almost destaging all of our stuff that we used to live life. It actually felt so good because it was just that much softer on the eye. And so I would encourage people too, like if your rooms are feeling heavy, just move some stuff out. Like I moved an end table out. I moved the blanket, like different things, which obviously some of that we want back in for life. But it was interesting how pulling some things out gave such a different feel to the room. My mom always gave me that tip that like your eye does need a place to rest. You know, it's like if your home is kind of like just busy, 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 then like it's nice to test it. You can just pull stuff out and then kind of see what you want to bring back in. So it was really eye-opening to me though, because I was like, man, we don't really even have a lot. And I still really noticed the change. It was almost like, why do we have this stuff on our counters? You know, but then you have to live life too.
Absolutely. Now that we're in a new home, we have definitely been doing kind of trial and error of what works in the different spaces. I'm curious to know what you think about furniture in our living rooms that may have overstayed its welcome. Do we get rid of it or wait until we replace it? What are just your opinions on that?
So get rid of it before you find the next one or just like, or when do you decide? Or
so for me, I would rather just have an empty space, a completely empty space. There's no right answer here. I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I think there's a big piece of personal preference. But what I would say, I generally tend to keep something until it's replaced, because if it's being used and serving the space, then I want to leave it in there. And I actually have a really good tangible example. So we have these chairs we bought when we moved into this house. So it's been like almost 8 years. And they're not like a high quality chair, but they just perfectly fit. There's a set of them and they just fit the space. And they're super comfy and they're cream. So, I mean, I like them because they're like light and neutral. But, you know, our kids are hard on stuff. And my son doesn't live here anymore, but he'd come home from a run and just lay all over the chair. You know, we're just like, eh. And we've cleaned them and all this. And I've even added extra stuffing to them. And we've talked about replacing them. And I actually, this is a quick side note. There was one season where we went and bought two different sets of chairs, like moved them out to the garage, brought in two. Like literally bought, return. And we eventually brought the old ones back in because scale is so tricky.
And so to answer your question, it's like I typically will kind of wait. And so now what we're doing with these chairs, because we still have them, is I will try to just give them or sell them when we go to move. You know what I mean? Because we are moving. And so you know, I think there's times where you can get rid of it if it makes sense with like the bigger timing of everything. But I've learned with just buying furniture in general, though, it's like it's such a process as far as scale and, you know, like so many parts. So I would say take your time too, because the worst thing is to buy a nice new couch and then it doesn't feel right in the space or whatever. So I would say keep it if it's anchoring and being useful right now. And then when the time comes, because also furniture can get back ordered too. So it's that whole thing of how long do you want to wait for stuff?
I've had to say, okay, why do you want it out? Why do you want to change it? And it's not just because there's too much in the room, it seems. It's because I'm embarrassed of other people coming over and seeing the way it looks. And so I'm prioritizing their opinion over my husband's preference. And I that's something that I have to wrestle with too, of saying like, does this really matter? Is this a battle that I want to fight? Again, maybe that's your preference that you choose to fight that battle. But for me, I just kind of had to say, okay, I'm just going to go with the flow and it'll happen at some point.
Yeah. And I think other people, I think we see things so much closer because we live with them every day. Like if I came over, I probably wouldn't notice the exact condition of the couch. Do you know what I mean? And because I know my husband struggles with our chairs. He's like, those chairs are just so gross. Well, if you walked in, you probably wouldn't even, I mean, because I have cute pillows on them. And again, like they're very comfortable. You know, we maybe didn't need to take off that. What are people going to think? Our home should be our place, in my opinion, where we like feel the most comfortable and can relax. And so if it's some old furniture, that's okay too, because that's all a process. And I think too, I've learned from buying furniture, you kind of want to, what we say is buy once, cry once. Go find the right piece, invest in it, you know, because typically you'll have it for a while, right? So if you have to make do with something older for a while, I think it's just fine. It's life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think we do just compare so much with people's homes that we see on Instagram. I talked about this when we were, gosh, it was back in the fall. I was talking just about insight that we have into other people's lives that we may not have had prior to social media, because we used to be in direct relationship with people and we only knew what their homes looked like. But now we see people's homes across the world. And so I'll just be honest, our coffee table right now, my dog has been teething and he has chewed up the side of that coffee table. It's not ideal, but it's just like, this is a season where we have this puppy. We're going to get things together. And it's always kind of just a process of, okay, now we have room in the budget for this, or now we have the time to put towards doing this. And no one's home is perfect. And the fact that people think that even like an influencer type person has a perfect home, it's not real. And so I just want to give people peace to say, if there is a dirtier chair that you need to cover with a pillow or to hide something a little bit, that most of us are doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll actually share just a quick, you know, I'm not going to give any details, but I actually did go to an influencer's home and, you know, and it was interesting because I'd only seen the social media side and it's like, you know, someone with extreme talent, beautiful design, all this. And it was interesting being in her home because I was like, oh, she's real. Like, I just want people to know, like, it's just, I mean, because if someone's going to like take a really nice photo of a space, they're going to make it look the best. It's sort of like when you list your home, you're going to make your home look the best you can and you're going to get the best pictures. So keep in mind, that's a lot of what social media is. And it doesn't, I would just encourage people to like take the inspiration of the like look or the colors or the design, but don't take it on that like, oh my gosh, that's how it looks every day. Cause there's no way. I mean, there's just, I mean, we all like have people that we're sharing our spaces with and things are coming and going and things are breaking. You know what I mean? We all are walking through the same realities. Yeah. So I think if you can keep a mindset of like, use it for motivation, but not discouragement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that because this is the last of my room by room series. So I'm glad that I said that here, because I think that applies to not just the living room. It's all of our spaces throughout our home. So that's just something that you can just keep in the back of your mind, that no one's space is perfect. And just, I mean, it's so cliche. Just don't compare. But I think that we have to rationalize what's true. Social media is not true.
No. And I don't know. I just recently learned of this. There's a trend. People are showing their normal houses, you know, their oak trim or whatever. And I find that really refreshing because I feel like most of us aren't living in custom built homes or whatever it is. Right. Or I mean, it's like being grateful for the house and the structure you have. And like, you can still do a lot to make a house a home, depending on, you know, it doesn't matter really what all the aesthetics are. But I find that I like that people are taking that kind of a perspective and just saying like, hey, I still have a great home. Like, we have family dinners and all these memories being made. And, you know, it's maybe not all to trend, but that's okay. Because what is trend, right? Like, it's ever changing.
Oh, for sure. All right. So to me, the comparison is one of the things that probably keeps us stuck when it comes to decluttering our homes. But what are some issues or some problems that clients of yours have run into keep them stuck when they are specifically decluttering the living room?
Okay. Yeah. Well, what I would really encourage people to do is to define what they want their living room to be for them. And I was thinking through this before we hopped on the interview. We've owned 4 homes over the course of our marriage and family. And it's interesting because the first house was a ranch where you almost walked into the living room, right? And it was kind of what we would call a great room today. Like, it was the only room we had for like the family, right? And that's how we defined it. The TV was there, the books were there, games were there. And then our second house was more traditional, where we had the formal living, the formal dining room. And so our living room in that season, we actually had like a computer armoire, we had the piano in there and games in the dining room, you know? And then we had an extra family room that was more the TV. And then we lived overseas, went back to like having one space. Again, the TV's back in there. And then now we're in a great room. And so I just say that as you move houses or have different places, I think it's like, we'll look at a floor plan or move into a house and think, oh, well, this has to be the dining room. This has to be the living room. What I would say is that I think you need to define what your living room should serve. You want it to be more of a music room, a game room, a reading room. Does it need to have multi-purposes? Do you need to have a desk in the corner for working from home? You know, so I think just putting some thought into the zones in the room, and maybe it's just a traditional sitting room. You know, it depends on what your floor plan is. You know, people have all different floor plans. I would say we've moved a lot towards that bigger, great room floor plan. And that can be good and bad because kind of it becomes a catch-all. And so what I would suggest, if people have young kids, what I did when we had our first house and our kids were little, I had like one big basket of toys that had a lid on it. So like it could still serve as a little bit of play space, but it didn't become like the playroom, right? And so just deciding what's important to you, maybe the living room for this season is the playroom, and that's okay too. But I think that if we don't define it from the front, it just becomes what it becomes, you know? So I think what people struggle with is they don't define it, and then they don't kind of set up system. Because if you define it and then set up the systems, like for example, you put the piano in there, put all the piano supplies in a basket or on the bench, or, you know, kind of get that like with light going. So that way it's going to be easier to maintain. And then also the room will be used. It'll probably be used even better, right? We purposely put a computer in that one house because it actually drew us more into that room. Because if we hadn't had that in there, we probably wouldn't have sat in that room as much, right? Not that you need to sit in the room, but I like to make every room serve purpose where it can, because that's using your real estate, right? So I would say think outside the box, but then think of how to define it and make it a little bit intuitive too, so people can help maintain the space.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm glad that you addressed toys, because that was one thing I did think of. I mean, we never had space for a toy room. So it was always just like, okay, we're going to put the toys right here in the living room and hopefully they don't go out into the other places of the space. And again, it's just seasonal, so it's okay. I was going to ask you, I've been asking everyone what they do with the things they've decluttered, but I feel like it's pretty much just like Facebook Marketplace, donate if you can. So I won't necessarily ask you that question unless you have any other opinions.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is just keep your decluttering and donating simple. So if you have, you know, a bunch of board games, just go donate them. If you have a really nice piece of furniture and you think you can sell it and you have the margin to do so, then do go and sell it. But I think people kind of get stuck in this, like, I've got to get money for something. And if it's a table that you bought at Target or, you know, whatever, like if you offer it free or, you know, really inexpensive, just don't spend. I mean, of course, it's nice to get money, but not if you're going to spend hours, because it can be super annoying to have to manage all of that correspondence and coordinating and people say they're coming. I think sometimes we miss the big picture because we're focused on like, oh, but if I could make money on this and make money. And so then you're kind of just like in this stagnation. And so I'm just a fan of move it out and keep it simple, you know? And if you are going to sell, I was just telling my daughter this last night because she's going to liquidate stuff because she's going overseas. I'm like, batch it together. If you're going to sell 3 things, post them all at once, make it simple on yourself, because like at the end of the day, you make $50, but you've spent 10 hours on it. I mean, just, you know, kind of just consider sort of what the point is.
Yeah. Oh, I love the idea of batching. No one said that yet, to batch it. Thanks for that tip.
Yeah. And I kind of did that when we moved into this house here, because it's funny when you move to different homes, a lot of furniture won't transition well. And so I kept a lot of it in the garage. Like we kind of moved a lot of it here to make sure what we would know what we would use. But then I did that. I just kind of would batch sell stuff. And I did make some good money, but it was kind of in the mindset of it. I had it all grouped together. It was already in the garage. Just make it simple on yourself, because then you'll actually realize the value of it. If it's like you're making dollars for it, it all depends on what your schedule is and your time. Like if you have plenty of time, then do that. But I find a lot of my clients think they have the time and energy to do it, but at the end of the day, they don't. And so it's like, just move the needle. That's what I would suggest. Yes, batching works really well. And batching, I mean, that's just a good organizational philosophy in general, like do things in the batches.
Absolutely. I'm trying to think. I think that's really all I wanted to ask you, unless there was any other word of advice that you have for the living room space, or since this is the last episode, any word of advice in decluttering room by room?
Yeah, well, I'll kind of just tie up on the living room. I would just say, and kind of what we talked about earlier, is that let your living room be what it needs to be for you in this life season. Don't get boxed into that it has to look this way. You know what I mean? Be okay to think outside the box and make your home work for you, right? Because a lot of us want to change things about our houses, but we can't, right? So make it work for you and adapt where you can. And then just decluttering in general, I think the biggest tip I would say is go in sections and go small, because what happens is we keep talking about social media. There's been a recent thing where someone's sitting in a whole chaos, you know, of a room because they had the organizational motivation, and then it like peters out, right? That happens to all of us. And the reality is a lot of us don't have these big chunks of time to go do the big, deep stuff, right? So drawer by drawer, cupboard by cupboard, all of that is going to be helpful. And I would still suggest room by room so you can sort of see completion, but don't try to tackle an entire room at once unless you have the right setup for that, because it's just, it can be more discouraging than encouraging, which is like, why put yourself there?
Yeah, absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about with those reels. Those are funny. And that's so true. I just go space by space. And even now, I mean, I'm just constantly just making my way through. We didn't bring nearly as much to this house as we had in our last house, but I'm still finding things. My husband and I just went through my closet the other day, and I was like, wow, I can actually whittle this down lower than I think. So I think there's always space for that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just had someone ask me this week. They said, well, how often should I declutter my closet? And I was like, well, I mean, I don't think there's like a set answer on that. I said, it depends. Because like, if you're someone who's like a huge shopper and a fashionista and like has this massive closet, you might want to declutter more because of just how your closet is and how you approach clothes, right? Other people that like maybe have a real simple wardrobe, it's like, I'd be like, you may not have to declutter much at all. You know what I mean? There's a whole continuum. But what I would say is kind of like what we're talking about. That's kind of how I view maintaining organized spaces, is I just kind of work, you know, kind of room by room throughout the year in my house. Like, okay, I'm going to go through all the drawers in the kitchen this month, and I'll just kind of casually do a drawer here or a drawer there. And I also encourage people, like, those are easy tasks to throw in, like while you're making dinner, you know? If you're doing one drawer, you can do it while you're simmering on the stove, right? So don't think that you have to carve out all these chunks of time, work at it in these little increments. And that's how your house stays organized, because, you know, I could move into a new place and set up my kitchen, but in 3 months or even 6 months, is it going to look where it was? No, because I have multiple people using all this stuff, not putting things back where they go, or we bring in and don't, you know, thin. So just, I really think that we have this idea of going in and getting the spaces done. Yes, get them done and get them set up. But then there is that, I equate it to cleaning. Like you don't clean your toilet once, leave it. Like you have to, like, if there's regular upkeep, right? It's very similar with organizing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Morgan, where can listeners find you if they want to connect with you online? Thanks for all these tips today. This was great.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So Morganize With Me is my brand and all that stuff. So I have a website, I'm on social media, I have a podcast, and so they can follow me there and keep up with me. And I'm always happy to chat about anything organizing. So I just want to encourage people that, you know, there's no perfect system, but it's just all about the process, right? Just digging in and doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, quickly, as we wrap things up, I'm going to ask you the two questions I ask every guest. And the first one is, what's been a beneficial resource in your life that you want to share with the listeners?
So I live in Colorado, like I mentioned, and I like to do like flowers and pots and all that. And I've been here about 8 years, and I've yet to have an evergreen make it through the winter. And I'm sure there's maybe a way, but I don't know. So what's been beneficial is I was at Home Goods and I had a birthday gift card there. And so I was all excited because, you know, when you have free money, you're like, yay. And they had these Martha Stewart boxwood circle plants, the artificial ones. And they do look a little artificial, a little. For sure. But they look pretty good, if that makes sense. And so I bought them, and they're in my two pots. I can see them right now in my window. And they make me so happy because, one, they're zero maintenance. And I can throw some little annuals around them this summer. But we live in a mountain climate. Like, and I came from Oregon where, like, everything lasted. And so if I have to throw away another boxwood that I bought, you know, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. So anyway, it's been beneficial to me because I love seeing the pots, and they're also maintenance-free, and they're going to look good year-round. So I would just say it's kind of an example of keeping it simple. Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I just did that as well because my one friend, she has a ton of plants in her home. She wants me to get a faux olive tree, but I'm like, I just want a real olive tree if I can grow it, if I can keep it.
Yeah, I wonder if you could. It would have to stay inside, I guess, all year.
It needs a lot of light. I think that's the only thing. And the space that I was looking for it is not very bright. So we'll see. But I'm a pretty good plant mom. I'm pretty good at keeping things alive. All that to say, she was like, well, on that space in your bookshelf, you have no light and you should just get this one on Amazon. So it's the same thing. It's like you can kind of tell it's fake, but it looks good enough. And if you're at a distance, you can't really tell. But it does bother me slightly. So, but I do like simple. I do like simple.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it's not my ideal. Like I would prefer, but I can't fight the fact that like nothing. And I just have tried. I've literally tried probably 4 or 5 different things and none of them have made it. And I suppose I could bring them into the house. Anyway, you kind of have to, I guess what we're saying is pick your battles, right? Like, it's like, I'd prefer to have something potted there and anchoring the porch. So it's doing that and it's a win-win. Yeah.
Yeah.
Make things simpler where you can, because there's a value.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Last one. And then I'll let you go is what is something that you can't stop talking about?
Okay. So I came prepared for this. It's this little perfume. Well, it's not that exciting, but so the brand is KJ, K plus J. So I have 2 daughters and they both have a signature scent. And whenever she comes home or whenever she's here, it smells good. So anyway, I basically delegated, which is one of my organizing tips. I said, can you find me a signature scent? That's your tasking. And so yeah. She sent me a text, 3 different ones. Well, then I go to Sephora and first of all, I don't really go to Sephora because the whole thing is stressful. I mean, I'm a Maybelline girl. But anyway, I go in there and I had no idea how expensive perfume and cologne was. I was, oh. So I had my other daughter with me. So she takes me to Target. I find a different signature scent. I had to reject this one in the original. This is a long story. But anyway, I found a different one at Target, which was good. And so I did that for a while. But then Ainsley got this for me for Christmas. Isn't that cute? The one she originally had. I like the Target one. It was $20. It was in my budget. But this one, and I don't know what it cost. I put it on though. And I feel like I'm in Hollywood or like I'm a famous person. I don't know what it is. It makes me just feel like, so I don't know. It's funny how that can make such a difference, if that makes any sense. I tell my daughter, I go, I like the way I smell. So anyway, that's what I can't stop talking about. Clearly good perfume. And it's such a cute little bottle. And I was able to take it on my last trip because it's just so little. Anyway, it makes me break.
So it looks like those little ones start between like 35 and 45, but the bigger bottles are 100.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to last me like at least 3 to 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're not like dousing yourself. Yeah. If you just give yourself a little spray.
Yeah. But it's funny how it's kind of like, it kind of gives me like a oomph during the day. Anyway, not that I smelled bad before, but I have like a scent as opposed to, you know, Dove lotion or something.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. My mom, that's one thing I remember from childhood. My mom would always just smell so good. And she had this, it was Origins spray. I don't even think they exist anymore because I've tried to find it. It was like a little place in Macy's, but they had this really nice board. Oh, actually, I just found it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. Well, I might have to check this out.
Yeah. That would be so nostalgic because, like, isn't it funny how your scent has such a recall and it layers your memories? It's so significant, right?
Yeah, I may have to get this. It's $74, but I just remember my mom always just smelled so fresh. And I told my husband, I'm like, I'm 35. I need a scent. I want people to know what I smell like.
Oh my gosh, I get you. Because that's where I was. I was like, enough of this, Morgan. Yeah. And one thing I'll say too, just because this is kind of one of my organizing tips, is once you find something you love, and not that you have to wear the same perfume your whole life, but like I was just thinking this morning, because speaking of Maybelline, I've used the green and pink mascara since high school, you know? And I know a couple of times I tried different stuff and I just get irritated. And I remember I read an article a long time ago where it's like, stop chasing something new. If you have a shampoo, a hairspray, a foundation, that is actually wisdom, just to like stick with it and use it. To say you don't ever try anything new, but I think that there can be a tendency to like just always be trying the latest and greatest. And it's like, well, then you can end up with a lot of waste because you don't like it or care for it. And so be thoughtful around that is what I would say. Like keep it simple where you can. It's life-giving.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Morgan, thank you again for joining me and having a conversation about the living room and just all these other things. I think it was fun.
Oh, yes. Perfume, all the things. Yeah, all the things. No, it's always so fun talking with you, Diane. So thank you. And thank you for all that you do to share your message, because it's a wonderful message.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation.
To learn more about today's guest, including links, resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at minimalistmomspodcast.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as my book, Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity, or other ways to connect or work with me online. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends on social media is very helpful and will encourage others on their journey to think more and do with less.